Well, hey, my name's Ben. If I haven't met you before, it is good to be with you. I'm one of the pastors here, and it is good to worship together, right? Yes, it is good to worship together. It's good to be gathered as God's people. It's good to connect with God. That's something that I am finding that that I need more and more, even just personally. That's something that I am wanting and seeking in my own personal life, and that is one of the reasons that Caitlin and I are going to be headed out. We're going to be taking a bit of a retreat to my family's place over near Lake Tenkiller, and thank you all for giving us the space and the ability to do that. That is wonderful, and we are grateful. We're really looking forward to traveling for non-medical reasons. I legit think this is like the second time in the last 2 years we've traveled for non-medical reasons, so we're pretty stoked about it. But anyways, also just wanted to give you a quick heads up. If you signed up for small groups, you're going to be getting an email this upcoming week. You'll get some more details there, but I just wanted to let you know if you signed up for small groups a couple of weeks ago, you'll be getting some more details this coming week in an email. Well, we are in our series. I think this is the second week. We'll be taking a break next week. Pastor Susan will be leading our service. She'll be preaching, and she's going to be taking a break out of our series. But for right now, we are in the book of 1 Samuel. We've been investigating 1 Samuel, seeing some of the things that this book in the Old Testament has for us. And if you were with us last week, you probably remember the story of Hannah. That was Samuel's mother. She was childless. She prayed to God, "God, would you please give me a child? I'll devote him to you. I'll send him for work in your service." And God did that. God heard her cry. God did that. And then she followed through. She kept her word as well, her promise to the Lord. And Samuel, this kid that was barely weaned when he was turned over to the temple and grew up in the house of the Lord. And he became known as something that is called a judge. Not a judge with, you know, the barrister's wig, that British thing. He wasn't a judge like that, maybe not like a judge that we commonly think of. We use the same word they use in the Bible, but in the Bible there are some additional things. In the Bible, when we talk about a judge, this was someone who was specially empowered by God. This is somebody who is who's empowered by God to lead the people of Israel. And they did some things that are kind of like judges in our modern day. They weighed in on what laws meant, what God's laws meant. They weighed in on disputes between different parties. But they would also do some things that are maybe not like judges do now. They were the political leaders of the time. The judge that God empowered was the political leader, the military leader in Israel, would tell the army, "Hey, you should move over here. The Philistines are about to attack. If you move the army here as opposed to here, it will work out better." That is what God says. The judge was this military, political, religious leader all rolled into one. But what set them apart was they were specially chosen and empowered by God. That was kind of their deal. They were chosen by God to do the things that they were supposed to do, and their connection with God, their relationship with God, that was at the forefront. They were not going to be in their position as a judge if they weren't connected with God, because they were nothing without Him. The connection with God, the relationship there, that was the whole deal. And if we look at the book of 1 Samuel, like, it's named after this guy Samuel. That was his whole deal. He was such an impactful person, an impactful judge. That's That's why it was so significant there, that he had a close relationship with God. But we're going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 8, and we see that Samuel's time leading Israel as a judge is actually coming to a close already. 1 Samuel chapter 8, you would figure, you know, 1 and 2 Samuel, he might be leading a little bit more. No, it comes to a close early. And so I'm going to invite you to turn there in your Bibles, 1 Samuel chapter 8. He was getting a little bit older. His time leading was coming to a close, and people were starting to look ahead. They were kind of starting to look ahead a couple of years and see, you know, maybe who would come next. And they had strong opinions about that, and most of their strong opinions, if you read the first couple of verses, are about Samuel's sons, Joel and Abijah. Samuel's sons were not the greatest of people. The first few verses of this chapter, chapter 8, talk about how they were greedy for money. They accepted bribes. Not someone you want in charge, especially when you look at potential leaders of the country. And so there's this problem, like, who is going to lead us next? And then we get to our passage. I'm going to start in verse number 4. Let me put that up on the screen for us here. 1 Samuel starting at verse 4. Finally, all the elders of Israel met at Ramah to discuss the matter with Samuel. Look, they told him, you are now old, and your sons are not like you. Give us a king to judge us like all the other nations have. Samuel was displeased with their request and went to the Lord for guidance. Do everything they say to you, the Lord replied, for they are rejecting me, not you. They don't want me to be their king any longer. Ever since I brought them from Egypt, they have continually abandoned me and followed other gods, and now they are giving you the same treatment. Do as they ask, but solemnly warn them about the way a king will reign over them. Samuel is, let's take this one piece at a time. The elders of Israel, the leaders of Israel, are calling this meeting, and they're a little bit rude to Samuel, right? They say, you're getting old. You're an old man. Come on now. They kind of attack him a little bit. They're saying Samuel's time is up. They're kind of taunting him, which is a bit ironic because Samuel actually continues to lead and follow God multiple chapters, quite a ways after this interaction. He anoints Saul as the first king of Israel. He serves as kind of this prophet figure for Saul. He tries to get Saul to go the right way. When that doesn't happen, he anoints David as the next king. Samuel's time is not up just because these leaders of Israel say so. I want to say it here clearly. Samuel is not done serving God just because he's a senior. And God is not done using Samuel. But the elders of Israel, these leaders of Israel, they had a very specific thing they were looking for. They had a very specific thing that they wanted. They wanted a king. And that sounds weird to us living here in the United States because we don't have kings. That's not something that we've had since the beginning of our nation, though obviously before our nation began, we were ruled by King George? George the Third, I hear. Fair enough. That was very quick, thank you. But somebody's going through Hamilton. There it is. Listen to musicals. They help with your history. That's what I'm learning right now. But we didn't have a king for most of our history. And so this concept might be foreign to us. Kings were the undisputed rulers of their domain. They were the people that were in charge. And I think if we look at it, it might almost seem like a judge in the Bible to us, because judges in the Bible led. They were leaders of the people of Israel. They, like judges, kings were military leaders, political leaders. In places outside of Israel in the ancient world, kings were actually kind of religious leaders too. There was religious significance to the king, because God had put the king in charge, or in the case of the places around Israel, a god had put the king in charge. Like Baal put this king in charge of Assyria or wherever else. Kings were seen as kind of living proof of their deity's power. And so if we look at it like that, it might be a little bit confusing to us. What's the difference between a judge and a king? And that comes in how kings were viewed, how judges were empowered. Because a judge was specifically chosen by God and empowered by God to do something, to lead the people of Israel. Often in the book of Judges, for example, the leader was brought up to free Israel from somebody, free Israel from oppression that they were experiencing at the hands of the Philistines or the Assyrians or whomever. And so God would bring up a judge, would empower a judge for a specific task to lead the people of Israel, and there'd be peace in the land for a while. But it was God empowering. It was God leading that person, gifting that person. The relationship with God really mattered, because it was God empowering them. A king doesn't necessarily depend on God to rule. The good kings do. The good kings that we see in the Bible, they depended on God. They had relationships with God. But time and time again, we see that the people that are put in charge, that are in charge because of who they are instead of who God had called, we see time and time again how it does not go well. The king was in charge because they were in charge. That was the end of it. No need for God to interact. And to the leaders of ancient Israel, that seemed to be a feature, not a bug. That seemed like what they wanted. I mean, put yourself in their shoes. All the nations that are surrounding Israel, they all had kings. And a king would marshal the military forces. A king would represent the nation to the world, would strike fear into people's hearts if they did something bad to the king's people. But the thing is, Israel already had a king. But we're clued into that in our verse here. Israel was, they had a king, just not the type of king they thought they wanted. Because God was king. God led Israel. It was the one time in the world's history that we talk about, you know, a theocracy, how God was leading a nation. God led Israel through judges. Those judges, sure, they did the human part of leading, but it was God ultimately in charge through his judges, through his appointed rulers. And here in 1 Samuel 8, God recognizes this. He recognizes the people of Israel are kind of trying to depose him, to say, we don't want God to be king. He says in the latter part of verse 7, God says, they don't want me to be king any longer. The people of Israel here are trying to kick God off the throne, so to speak. The elders of Israel looked into the future and said, you know what, we want something else. We want a human king, not this whole being led by God. We want a human king, you know, like all the other nations have. I think the why of this is important, and we're clued into this in a couple of places in our passage here. They were looking into the future, which is not a bad thing. Please don't hear me say that looking into the future, you know, planning, things like that, those are good, valuable, wonderful things. But they were looking into their future, and in their planning, they decided to cut God out of the process. Essentially, what they're saying is, we don't want another judge, you know, this person empowered by God to lead us, because we don't trust that God should be the one leading us. We would rather be led by one of us. We think they'll do a better job. They're not trusting in God to provide for them, to provide a good leader, to provide a good outcome, to walk with them in their journey as a nation. And I think some of this is related to fear, their fear of how the future might go. And we're told in the passage they are afraid of what Samuel's sons might do if they led them. And we have to wonder if they were afraid, well, if that's going to be the option, Samuel's sons, if that's who God's going to choose, which we are not told. We are kind of told that God's not a huge fan of them either. They were greedy. They wanted bribes. That's not something that God is a fan of. But the elders of Israel were looking into the future and saying, well, if that's the choice, you know, let's do our own thing. I would rather do it this way. They cut God out of the process. And there are a number of things that I think we can learn from a passage like this. We could talk about how things go better when God is leading. When God is leading us. When God led Israel, things went better. When God leads us, things go better. And that's true. I mean, if you know anything about biblical history, you know that the majority of kings in the Bible, were they good or bad? Any takers? They were not good at all. There were a couple of good ones sprinkled in there, don't get me wrong. There were some people that were faithful, that were trying to follow God well. But 9 times out of 10, it was not a good deal. We could talk about that. We could talk about how kings did exactly what Samuel warned them that they would do. In the passage right after this, after verse 9, Samuel goes on a list warning people, the people of Israel, if you get a king, that king is going to do this. That king is going to take your sons and make him part of his army. The king is going to take your daughters and make them his wives. That king is going to take your land and make it his own. And we actually see the next several books of the Old Testament, they bear this out. That is what happens. Power corrupts. It does. It was true back then. It is true for our world today. And those things, those are all true. We can be thinking about those. And if you want to dive deeper into this passage this week, I'd encourage you to sit with it a while, to read this chapter and see what God might lead you to see. But I want to focus in on one thing specifically. I think what is underrated here is these leaders of Israel, these elders of the nation of Israel, their fear. They lost hope that God would provide for them. They lost hope. They said, we don't think that we should trust you, God. We'd rather do it our own way. And their fearful response, because I'm convinced that's what it was, their fearful response of saying, I would rather be in charge here. I don't trust God to have this one. In their fearful response, they deposed God. And instead of having somebody connected to God in charge, they chose something else. Someone who was sometimes connected to God, some of the kings, but not many of them. And I think if we look at that kind of backdrop, we can look at our world today in kind of a different way. Because we might see some similarities between our world and theirs. Maybe even we feel like we're in a similar situation where we feel like We look towards the future and there's reason to be anxious and nervous. We feel like we're losing hope. We can feel that way. And there are a number of ways, and it might come all back to us being afraid for our future and losing that hope. We might feel that way in our spiritual lives. Like God has left and it doesn't feel like God is near us in our journey. We can feel that way. We can feel that way about our nation, that our nation has consistently chosen rough things and is in a rough spot. And it can feel like bad things are coming. We might even lose hope when it comes to our family, our most intimate relationships. We might feel like there is distance there or there is hurt or grief in some way. And we might lose hope. And what I want to encourage us with is even when the nation of Israel lost their hope, they lost their faith, they lost their trust in God, even when they lost their hope, even when they lost their faith and trust, when they didn't follow God, they turned their back on Him, God still never turned His back on them. Even when they didn't follow God as king, even when they threw out people that were trying to lead in a godly way, the people of Israel do that time and time again. God still doesn't turn His back on Israel. God leads them. God, the books that come right after this, you know, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, all through the prophets, all of these are books where this nation of Israel has chosen a king. But God still, they've turned their back on God, but God still hasn't turned His back on them. God judges them. God rebukes them sometimes, absolutely, because that's sometimes what you do when you love somebody. You make sure they're not doing something that hurts them and others. But God never turns His back on the people of Israel, even though they turned their back on Him. God continues to work with them and point them to a better path. And I don't know about you, but when I see that in the Bible, that gives me a little bit of hope and faith and trust for even today, for even whatever I am going through, whatever we are going through, our families, our nation, our world. And then there's one other thing here. Because there is the hope that we as Christians have. We know that the God of the Bible that interacts with all of us, that provides us this hope, He doesn't just stay on the outskirts. He doesn't just say, "All right, Israel, you have your king. I'm going to, you know, stand far away or let you do what you're going to do." Our God, we confess, has this salvation story at work. And this salvation story, this plan to save our world, is not derailed by this mistake that people made about 3,000 some odd years ago. That this nation of Israel did not derail God's plan to save the world because they wanted a human king. They wanted to do things their own way. This mistake will be undone. That is one of the things that we confess as Christians, that Jesus is Lord, that Jesus, our God, is King, that one day every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord, that He will be seated at the right hand of the Father, and there is a day coming when all will be made right, and everyone will see that God should be, that God is King. That's one of the hopes that we have, that even the mistakes that we make, even the difficulties that we encounter, we can still have hope because we know Jesus will be crowned King, that everyone will see it, and that one day the brokenness in our land will be no more. And that everything we are going through right now is just it is us waiting until Jesus is seen by all as king. He is already, the already but not yet. Jesus is already king. He became king of our world. God never was not king, but Jesus was enthroned again when he defeated death on the cross. But there is a time coming when he will undo every bad thing. And that gives me a bit of hope and faith and trust. And I hope you will put your hope and faith and trust in him. It's worth asking two things in response to a passage like this. First is God king of your life? Are you someone who is committed to following the Jesus way? I hope so. If not, come interact with me after the service. I'd love to talk with you more about that. But is God king of your life? Are you living with him as king of your heart? And maybe the second is pretty related, I think, but might be one for all of us to honestly look at and answer. Do we trust God to be king in our world, in our life? Do we have the faith to trust that God is king, even when we look ahead and we see the fear, see the difficulties, the troubles that are in our world? Do we have the faith, the trust in God to say, God, I trust in you? Not that God magically, you know, makes everything turn out okay, or that God makes our lives as Christians easy, because that is not what we are told happens. But that God is with us, that God leads us, and that God is going to come and make everything right in the end. Do we trust in that? Carter, I'm going to ask if you want to come up here, grab your guitar. The song that we sang earlier, You Are My King, I think that'd be a fitting way for us to close. And so if you would just join with us and sing, we're just going to sing that bridge and the chorus to Amazing Love. But I'm going to invite us to do this because it's kind of our closing prayer. Sing these words, You Are My King.
Sing together with us.
You are my King. You are my King. Jesus, you are my King. Jesus, you are my King. Amazing love, how can it be that you, my King, would die for me? Amazing love, I know it's true, and it's my joy to honor you in all I do. I honor you in all I do. I honor you.
In all we do, in what we live out, may we confess that Jesus is King. May we trust him, and may we help our world see that life is better when he is Lord. Take care, church family. Blessings to you. Go in peace.